Welcome to the EmpoweredPatientRadio.com show. I'm Karen Jagoda, and my guest today is Dr. Steve Steinhubl. He is the Director of Digital Medicine at the Scripps Translational Science Institute, stsiweb.org. And we're talking today about the role that STSI is going to be playing in the NIH Precision Medicine Initiative cohort program. And I want to welcome Steve back to the show, and congratulations on the award of this terrific grant. So welcome, Steve. Thanks for taking some time today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great talking to you again.
So let's start off by explaining what this cohort program is, because it's pretty embracing, and it would be great just to hear from you what it is and what's the goal.
The PMI, or the Precision Medicine Initiative, is the largest and I think most ambitious and I'm biased, also the most important medical research program ever undertaken. And it's really designed to completely change our understanding of health and wellness. And beyond being just a research trial, it's eventually designed to act as a model for the way healthcare can be provided. In brief, it's going to involve a million individuals, and a million individuals where we'll have genetic information and other biomarker information, but also collect physiological and environmental data, so through wearable sensors or in-home or in their car sensors, and be able to collect all of that and to be able to do it over decades. Rather than just a short-term, you know, one-time snapshot, and really be able to understand and refine and individualize our treatment of different chronic conditions or acute conditions, as well as better understand the nuances of wellness and how each individual can keep themselves in their optimal state of wellness.
And you're saying a million people. Are you looking for people of all different ages, from like little babies to old people?
Exactly. Healthy, sick, U.S. citizens, non-U.S. citizens living in every state, every territory in the United States. The one qualifier to get in is you have no intention of moving outside the United States in the next year. And other than that, pretty much anybody is eligible and encouraged to join.
Now, are there going to be costs for the patient to enroll or to have their data captured in any way? Or is that
no cost to the patient? Time is a cost for everybody, and there will be some time, but we're going to try to minimize that. And if we do our job well, what we hope is that anybody who is generous enough to be a volunteer and a participant in the PMI program will feel that they get more out of it by being part of it than they're putting in. So research is too often a one-way data suck of taking a lot of data from participants and then never giving that information back. And what we plan on doing is being able allow the participants to share their information, but then as being part of the PMI, we're going to synthesize that and give it back to the participant in a way that they choose, that they want to be able to understand it, and provide them the information that they're most interested in. And that could be, how do I compare to other people in the country that are similar to me, or how do I compare to myself a year ago, or I can look at both of those. And we hope that as we get better technologies and we understand better, that people would be able to look and understand, oh, this is what happens to my blood pressure when I have a stressful day. This is what happens to my blood glucose when I eat pancakes versus oatmeal for breakfast. And just, you know, things that are common questions that we maybe wonder about but never have the ability to study and be able to give that information back to the participants.
And what about the role of the doctor in that kind of scenario? Does the doctor also get the information? Does the doctor find that information overwhelming because they already have a lot of information? What's the doctor's cut on that?
Yeah, so the doctors, I don't want to say the doctors don't have a role, but really the doctors are outsiders on this. All of the data is going to the participants. Now, all the participants will have the ability to link their electronic health record with the Precision Medicine Initiative app, and be able to collect the data from the electronic health record. But at least right now, there's no plans to make that a two-way connection where that data can directly go back to the electronic health record for the doctor. But the participants, as they should, have the right to and the ability, and we would encourage them to share the information with the doctors. But this is, you know, a very disruptive approach to healthcare. And that's why, as I mentioned earlier, it's meant to be a model for the way healthcare can be provided in a way where individuals can get information within their home based on real-time data, both for chronic condition management and many simple acute diagnostic procedures that they, that data is collected from their home setting and their real lifestyle and their real world existence and what they do, that that information is synthesized and then actionable reports are given back to them as to what to do. And in all of that scenario, it doesn't necessarily include having their doctor or a doctor involved in that.
Now, that data comes into some kind of model, predictive model, that might say, we're seeing these five warning signs, so you might want to consider going to see your doctor because we're seeing some things that you may not recognize. Would that be part of the kind of way the data could be used by a patient?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a ways down there, but that would certainly make sense. So we have a lot to learn on doing that. So, for example, in somebody who has bad asthma or COPD or heart failure, these are all conditions that if we get smarter and better at being able to monitor these individuals in their homes, in their daily settings, when they're climbing up a flight of stairs and recognizing that they're breathing harder than usual when they're doing that, or that their oxygen level's dropping more than usual, or that their heart rate's more than usual. All of these things we should be able to capture, and as we learn, and there'll be a lot of learning. That's why this is designed to be a multi-decade project and not just a short 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 year project. So over time we'll have to learn and how to predict it, and obviously there's going to be a lot going on outside of the PMI that we can then feed into the PMI and be able to, so let's say somebody does develop a predictive algorithm specifically for individuals who have heart failure, and then anybody in the PMI of heart failure, we can include that algorithm and update things and give them the information. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things about healthcare that need to be changed. And one of them is, or one of the key aspects of this personalization is to help individuals recognize when they do need to see a doctor, when seeing a doctor is of benefit.
I always like to support doctors, especially when I'm talking to a doctor. I think it's important to talk about the empowered patient, but we all know that doctors have a lot of knowledge about stuff. And sometimes I think patients get a lot of data and they don't know what to do with it. So I love this idea that it's kind of being collected and being used and being compared to other things. So let's roll this back a little bit and talk about how some of that data is collected. I'm assuming a lot of it is going to be through my mobile phone or through some kind of sensor that gets installed in my house somehow.
So the honest answer is right now we don't know what sensors, but the overall goal is, as the technology gets better, to get more sensors. So initially it will be just the smartphone, but which is a pretty impressive sensor in and of itself, but not the way we envision, where in people's homes that have technologies that can very easily measure, let's say every day it takes 30 seconds, can measure your blood pressure, a single lead EKG, your heart rate, your respiratory rate, your temperature and your oxygen level in your blood, and we can collect things like that with a sensor. We could have sensors in the home that measure the indoor air quality. There can be sensors that are under your mattress that measure your heart rate and your respiratory rate when you sleep and collect that. And so as more and more sensors get developed and validated and are reasonable for tools to be used in the PMI, then they'll be included. But that is going to be a major focus, and that's why we're able to do this. It's one thing to get the genetic information, but the wireless sensors that are going to be available soon beyond just what's available on a smartphone are going to have a very important role in helping us refine our understanding of how everybody's a little bit different.
And are you feeling comfortable enough that most people have smartphones or smart devices? Are we leaving out a segment of society here that might be suffering from chronic diseases or the older demographic or rural because they don't have these devices? Is that one of the concerns?
So it's definitely a concern, and definitely you're right. Today, it's about two-thirds of U.S. adults have smartphones, and it's predicted by 2020, whoever does these predictions, 100% of U.S. adults will have smartphones. But certainly I look at just my own parents, you know, have tried smartphones, neither one liked it, but my parents are people we'd love to be part of the PMI. And so part of our job is to make sure there are alternatives. It may be very difficult if someone has neither a smartphone or a computer, but we also want to have contingencies for that and have potential solutions for that. But really a key to the PMI is that kind of two-way connectivity to not only be able to get information, but to get the information back to the participant.
And is NIH worried about the privacy concerns of citizens, of doctors, of pharmaceutical companies, whoever is out there in the world of big data? Is this a high concern for them to protect patients' data?
Oh, I would say it's their number one concern. This wonderful idea and this really groundbreaking project could totally grind to a halt if we don't aren't as 100% confident in the privacy and security of the data as we possibly can be. And we have some of truly the best people in the country involved in privacy and security, helping develop the digital infrastructure for this, and as well as overseeing the digital infrastructure to make sure that's the case. And that focuses more on the security. The privacy also involves anybody who's willing to volunteer to be part of a research project is sharing their information. And so it's also critically important that we respect the wishes of the participants and their willingness to share. For a lot of research projects, we all say, oh, well, this will be de-identified data. So they'll never be able to associate it back with you. But when you look at it, any study that involves genomic data, that's so personalized. There's no one else in the world who has your exact same genomic data, there's almost no way you can say this will be completely de-identified. And so we have to, as equally important to having a secure digital infrastructure, is to have a really unique and meaningful participant-centric focus on their privacy and their control of their privacy.
Is NIH going to make this information available to researchers, to pharmaceutical companies, to academic institutions? Where is this data going to go? Who's going to use it?
It's designed to be very open. So everything about this project is, I think, very visionary and very forward-thinking. But one of the key users of the data, we hope, will be citizen scientists. And so there will be obviously different tiers of data that are available to anyone. For any researcher, they have to have a certain level of training for just understanding the importance of data security and things. And so as there are more and more tiers for individuals and for researchers who want to answer questions, the real goal of this is this should not be and can't be a siloed data repository that either Scripps or Vanderbilt or Mayo Clinic, which are the other major partners, all the three major academic partners in this adventure, that we don't own any of that data, that it's owned by anybody who's a taxpayer and probably beyond that. But, because really the more people we can have looking at data, asking different questions of data, the more likely we are to find new breakthroughs. And that's the whole goal of this.
I'm glad you're on the young side, so you're going to be around a long time to see this stuff blossom.
Because I'm not that young. I could use another 20 years cut off me to really see this grow into fruition. But I think it's truly the most exciting research program ever undertaken, and it has the potential to change so many things. It's going to be just very lucky and very honored to be part of it.
So before we run out of time here, I'm sure people who are listening to this want to know how they can get involved. And are you taking people's registration? Are you providing some basic information to the general public right now? Or what can you say about that?
Right now, because there have been a lot of people interested, they had a lot of press releases when the awards were made in July. And not surprisingly, a lot of people are interested. President Obama has talked about this several times. And the NIH has a website. You can just Google NIH Precision Medicine Initiative. There's a website where you can register your interest, and then it'll ask for your email address. And then when it is possible to register volunteer to be part of the study, you'll get an email.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure to get that URL and post it along with the description of this podcast, so people who are listening will also be able to find that more easily. And we're just going to have to get you back on the show, because I had a whole lot more questions to ask you. And this is such an exciting project. I'm sure you've got a lot more to say as well. So thank you for your time today. And I want to suggest folks do check out the stsiweb.org site to find out a little bit more about their good work at the Scripps Translational Science Institute. And I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Steve Steinhubl, Director of Digital Medicine at Scripps Translational Science Institute. And you can follow them on Twitter at Scripps, STSI. I'm Karen Jagoda, and you've been listening to EmpoweredPatientRadio.com. Follow me on Twitter at Karen Jagoda. Like us on Facebook at Empowered Patient Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.